On today's Innovative Ideas podcast, we're going to be speaking to Mary Kate Scott, founder and CEO of Scott & Company. Ms. Scott is a former associate principal with the McKinsey & Company and has published several landmark reports on the evolving retail clinic field for the California Healthcare Foundation. Mary Kate Scott, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Paul.
Mary Kate, and I'm going to go into a little business school jargon here, so I want you to help me turn it into plain English. Clayton Christensen, who I believe is at Stanford, has described retail clinics as disruptive innovations. I guess another way of saying that is that these clinics, and maybe you could say a little bit about what they do and what their business model is, are challenging existing healthcare providers like doctors in ER and offering a different option to patients who have some basic healthcare needs. So could you talk about why these clinics are disrupted to existing arrangements and what kind of transition are they affecting in the healthcare market?
Well, I think they're innovative, but I don't think they're particularly disruptive, to be a contrarian. I think where they're innovative is they have looked at healthcare from the consumer or the patient's point of view and have thought about what is it that patient would really like to experience in healthcare. And what they've done is thought about taking a subset of very common conditions, think about flu shots, bronchitis, strep throat, middle ear infection, and said, we're going to treat just a small number of things, and we're going to change where they're treated, and they're going to put them in a grocery or a drugstore or a Walmart, and they're going to change the provider from a doctor to a nurse practitioner. And by doing that combination of things, changing what they treat, how they do that, and where, they've come up with a very convenient offer, which is also a lot cheaper, and many times cheaper for the consumer. So it's innovative because it's looking at healthcare from a very different perspective.
So you'd call this a convenient innovation?
Well, I do call it a convenient innovation. I mean, you're right to challenge if it's disruptive because there's a lot of criticism that perhaps these retail clinics or convenient care clinics would disrupt a medical home. And, you know, the data show differently. The data show that they don't disrupt a medical home, and there's two perspectives here. One is about two-thirds of people who visit retail clinics don't have a medical home to disrupt.
And this, just to, for our listeners who don't know, the idea of the medical home is that you'd see a primary care physician who would then help you with all of your preventive and maintenance healthcare needs and then refer you to specialist later on if you need one. And the argument is that substituting a retail clinic for this would disrupt that idea, but you're saying the data is pointing in the opposite direction.
Right, and there's a couple reasons. I mean, in theory, the medical home is a good idea for many, but probably not all people. If you have a very serious chronic condition, it can be the most appropriate way to get care from the same provider who is essentially at the center of your healthcare provision needs and then sends you out to specialists. But again, we're talking about it's a fairly common set of basic conditions. And so some folks say this doesn't disrupt the medical home at all. The doctor's advised of when the patient goes to the retail clinic, is told when they've experienced a strep throat, if it tested positive, if they've had an antibiotic. So there is continuity of care. But as I said, for about two-thirds of folks, they actually don't have a medical home to disrupt. So it's a good idea in theory, but in fact, these retail clinics serve a really important need of increasing access to care.
And they're also providing access to people who don't have health insurance. So that's another affordable, convenient option, not just for people who may have insurance but don't have access to a regular doctor or don't see them that often, but for people who've got no health care coverage and need at least basic access.
Right. So you see actually quite a number of the safety net population using retail health care clinics, but you actually see quite a lot of people who are insured also use them. They might have, say, a health maintenance organization where they can't get care after hours, and this is actually a cost-effective approach or the more convenient approach. So these retail clinics serve a variety of different populations.
So if we can, just for a minute, could you talk about where the retail market was, say, I think 3 years ago, maybe back in 2006, where there were just a handful of them, to where we are now? There are now probably close to 1,000 retail clinics across the United States. Do you think the model has reached a tipping point? Is it saturated? What are we going to see out of retail clinics in the next few years?
We've seen a lot of changes even in the past 3 years. So we've seen them grow from about 60 retail clinics at the end of 2005, and here we are 4 years later, and we're about 1,300 retail clinics. A couple of big changes. One, I think one of the most interesting things is the number of healthcare providers, so hospitals, healthcare systems, primary care practices that are now opening up retail clinics.
So it's moving away from the Walgreens or the CVS house clinics to, or at least not housing them, but sponsors of them are now doctors' offices and hospitals and healthcare systems like the Mayo Clinic.
Right, right. But your other trend that, you know, now they're very large retailers own these retail clinics, that's something new that happened about two years ago. So CVS purchased MinuteClinic and Walgreens purchased its own TakeCare clinic, and Kroger now owns the Little Clinic. So that's the other big trend, is that the retailers are starting to say, we really believe in this model. And when you're looking at, you know, very large corporations saying, we believe in this, and this is a trend that's here to stay, you can actually see that I think we've even passed the tipping point. People often say, is it a trend or a fad? And I'll give you an argument that a fad is, you know, a low-carb diet. It's easy, reversible. But a trend is something that really has an enduring momentum, and it won't change. And if you think about things that are enduring, it's things like the cost of healthcare, our challenge with getting access to timely healthcare, and those are trends. And so you've got these very large corporations and now healthcare systems saying, this is the right way to deal with these trends.
And what do you see as the emerging market areas for retail clinics in the future? For instance, how are retail clinics going to be positioning themselves during the ongoing efforts to vaccinate people for both seasonal and swine flu? And do you think that there's a possibility of these retail clinics moving into more chronic disease management in the next several years?
Well, yes, I think that the retail clinics are actually an important point of care, particularly right now with immunization. They're working very closely with CDC, and CDC certainly hope to see even more retail clinics open. They see it as an excellent way to get public health initiatives out, like H1N1 vaccine out there. So they also see retail clinics as an important provider for the safety net population more broadly. And then we're starting to see some retail clinics create some novel, you know, whether it's lifestyle care with smoking cessation and weight loss, we're seeing those kinds of programs emerge, and a couple of programs now in chronic care. They've just started to move into asthma management, and we're starting to see some pilot programs as they work with different patients with diabetes, whether that's to turn to continuous glucose monitoring or other programs to help them manage their chronic condition. I think we're going to see quite an expansion of services. Interesting to see as technology and devices emerge, if people will choose their retail clinic to connect the device and the home with their care.
And I guess the interesting thing here is they'll really have to make a transparent quality case and price case for their healthcare services, whereas at other healthcare providers, at least now there's some opaqueness in terms of, you know, what's the quality of asthma care at a doctor's office or perhaps at a hospital. But the focus on the retail clinics, ironically, you know, force them to be more transparent. So perhaps we'll drive more innovation that way.
Well, it is interesting. The retail clinics have been challenged to prove their quality. I find it interesting that they've actually demonstrated higher quality than at many physicians' offices. Now, in part, this is because they have just a few number of conditions, but it's also in part because they're using electronic medical records and practice management systems that, if you will, force a provider to ensure that they're providing quality care through these electronic checklists. So the providers are forced to use evidence-based medicine every single time, every single case. So the combination of this tight list of services and the process for providing care has ended up with some of the highest quality scores, well beyond many physician offices.
In 2006, when the state of Massachusetts implemented its individual mandate, that is that everyone in the state, with some exceptions for low-income people, would be required to buy health insurance, the primary care physician shortage in that state became much more acute, and it's ongoing today. The state's really struggling to find enough primary care options for the hundreds of thousands of people that it suddenly injected into the healthcare system. And we're having that same debate in Washington with the Senate Finance Bill, the Baucus Bill, that would also require everyone to buy health insurance, a similar feature to other bills in the House. Do you think that the health reform movement, I mean, let's leave aside the cost implications or, you know, whether or not we think that the government taking a bigger role in the healthcare market's a good thing in the long term, but do you think that retail clinics will benefit from, in effect, pushing so many more people in the system who are going to demand more affordable, more convenient options?
Well, I think a couple of things are really encouraging retail clinics to the forefront, and some of it is a lot of this health reform. I think we've started to highlight that people really do need greater access and struggle to gain access. You know, you mentioned primary care. Now, retail clinics are not deliverers of primary care. But what they can do is relieve some of the pressure on the primary care office. And as you relieve that pressure, you've created more capacity for a doctor to provide, I'll call it higher order primary care, and you've enabled the retail clinic to provide a basic level of care for some very common conditions. So I do think it's an innovative way to think about how to improve, you know, access, quality, convenience, you know, through, in effect, giving the right care at the right time with the right provider. I take your point about putting cost to one side. To me, it's at the forefront. You know, it's interesting that for many consumers, the retail clinic hasn't changed the cost equation. Because so many of them accept insurance, the copay is the same for the consumer. One of the things that we'll see with some of the health reform initiatives is the consumer will bear more of the cost. And so we suspect that as the consumer bears more cost, they'll become more discriminating against where they take their conditions and treatments. And we suspect that they might actually become a little bit more fiscally conservative. You know, it's a funny analogy, but we no longer take our cars to get the oil changed at the mechanic. We respect that a mechanic is a highly trained individual and really looks after the higher order electrical and safety systems, and now we go to the Jiffy Lube to get our oil changed. And while it's kind of a simplistic example, effectively, the consumer's being trained that, you know, these kinds of providers can do different things to your car, and they can do different things to your health care. So the retail clinic's not trying to be your doctor. On the other hand, you know, access to health care is not just about going to the doctor. It's really about being a health care provider, the right provider, right time.
Do you think this is fair to say that retail clinics are part of a trend of, you know, in other industries we see specialization, we see technology replacing labor. So, you know, these retail clinics are very specialized. They have, at least for healthcare, in many ways, state-of-the-art with their electronic health records and their ability to have protocol-driven healthcare in the areas where it's available, that this is a trend that could be an example for the rest of the industry in some ways?
Well, I think it is. I always find it amusing that the AMA is somewhat opposed to retail clinics, although less so now, and they're always fighting against them, and yet it's the AMA who thinks that everyone should have electronic medical records, and it's the retail clinics that, in fact, actually have them. So, you know, I actually see a thawing of relationships between all the different providers as everyone recognizes, you know, where they fit into the system. I don't meet very many physicians who went to medical school for 7 years who want to treat common conditions. What they do want to do, what I find, is people are trying to find innovative ways to give people the health care they need, when they need it, at the price that makes sense. So I think that what we are seeing is a real detente between all the different types of providers as everyone tries to think through how to get the consumer the right care.
And find new innovative ways to deliver that care to the market. Mary Kate, thank you very much for joining us today. We look forward to having you on again soon.
Thank you, Paul.